The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, and Chicago. And if you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. How was Ride for Miles?
Ride for Miles was fabulous. The weather was perfect. It was 70 degrees and sunny and
clear
the
blue
people
sky.
Were fabulous. And not like this week. It's been a little chilly this week.
Yeah, it feels like we've turned the corner on summer, yes?
It's October.
No, it's not. It's just starting September. It's not. But you know what? A lot of people would say this is the best time of year to ride.
Yes.
Fall riding.
Yep.
On my way to the studio, though, I did see a lot of trees that are not only just green anymore. They're kind of like orange and red. And
a lot of leaves on the ground.
So I heard from one of my friends in California, actually, just before I left for the studio. She's getting ready to do a half Ironman in Austin next month. So she's training, you know, out near San Diego this month. She says it has been in the 90s and above with humidity, which is so not like San Diego. So it's been that way for days and days. So I guess we shouldn't complain about anything we got.
Our weather's perfect. It's always perfect in Cleveland.
Yeah, because if you don't like it, just wait a minute. So we do have a great show for you this evening.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a show.
Yes.
We do. All right, Interbike began last Monday with the dirt demo, and I decided to forego the event this year. And there's a good reason, because I am going to be at the Philly Bike Expo in November.
Okay.
So I had to choose East Coast, West Coast. I chose East Coast this
Philly
year.
Philly or Vegas, right?
Exactly. How hard was that? Okay. I did task a colleague of mine to convey her experience of Interbike. We are going to talk with her this evening. Her name is Robin Bailenga. She is the proprietor of Pedal Chic in Greenville, South Carolina. Now, isn't it weird that I've never heard of Greenville, South Carolina, but we just spoke with the two guys who organized the Titan 300,
yep,
and it's either starting or ending or going through Greenville, South Carolina. So I guess I know more about it than I thought. At any rate, Pedal Chic is a store that caters to women. Robin has a very distinct perspective on the bicycle business, and I caught up with her the day before the Consumer Day in Vegas. So we'll hear what she has to say about what's trending and how attendance was and what she saw that she liked. So she's sort of my eyes and ears at Interbike this year.
Good.
We'll also speak with our friend Richard Fries about this year's Providence Cyclocross event, which is supposed to be heading towards World Cup status.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm pretty excited to talk about that. He's also going to tell us for the first time this year, he's an announcer, a race announcer, and he's a good one. He actually did some television announcing this year, and he was so excited. He's really happy about it. And he announced for the UCI Para Cycling World Championships. He also rode in the Vermont Dirt Grand Prix this year, and he's going to share his thoughts about dirt riding and solo riding. Because a lot of people like to ride by themselves.
Yeah.
It's a whole different experience. And finally, we're going to speak with a guy named David Trimble. He is the race director and originator of the Red Hook Criterium. You say, what is that?
That sounds interesting.
It is. Ever ride a fixie?
Yes.
Do you like it?
It can be okay, yeah.
Did it have brakes?
Of course.
Oh. Well, David dreamed up something way better than just riding a fixie. He put together a crit using no-brake fixed gear bikes on a tight technical course. But wait, it gets better. He does it at night in the dark.
Can we use lights at least?
We'll ask him that. How's that? Both men and women can compete. There are two separate categories. People come from all over the world to show their prowess with their fixies. They're track bikes, really. The courses are not banked. They're just, you know, on street crit.
Mm-hmm.
This year's Red Hook was just held in Barcelona, Spain, this past weekend, a week ago. And so we'll see how it all went down and learn about the history of the race. And there is a purpose to the race. There's also a 5K run associated with it. So we also have news and we have chat. So are we ready?
Yep.
All right. Yank on your toe straps. Let's go. And we'll welcome Robin Bailenga to the Outspoken Cyclist to tell us all about Interbike. Tell me how attendance is.
Oh, my gosh. Attendance is amazing. I have to tell you, out of the many years that I've been coming, you would be thrilled to see the women here.
Oh, cool.
Oh, my gosh. It's the attitude is shifting. It is becoming more and more like a homogenous outdoor retailer. We still have a long way to go, but I am seeing a lot of women on the sales floor. A lot of women and professional looking, young, bright women. So it's exciting.
And would you say the number of shops in general is up or down or the same? I know the first couple of days it's always crowded and then it kind of thins out.
Well, tomorrow is the day that they open it up to
consumers.
So I am excited about the number of shops that I'm seeing here. Attendance seems to be really good to me. My days have been booked. Our meetings are going well. There's so many exciting things that I am seeing. New products, new pricing is finally starting to come down on a lot of models.
Wow.
It's really exciting. Some of the bike dealers that I've been dealing with, the pricing is getting more reasonable, which, as you know, for women, and not to make this just about women, but sometimes that barrier of entry is sheer dollars because they don't spend a lot of money on themselves.
Yeah, so do we need to change women or do we need to change the product? But that's a whole different story.
That's another story.
It is another story.
That's another story. But we're seeing a lot with power meters, really exciting trainers that will hold all kinds of bikes and tires with built-in power meters that talk to your iPhone and Bluetooth, and it's just amazing product.
Because Pedal Chic caters basically to women,
mm-hmm.
Can you give me a couple of the products you've seen that you will definitely bring in to your shop for the 2015 season?
And I'm sorry, I need to tell you the name of this speaker, but it's a really cool speaker that fits on your bike. It comes in lots of beautiful colors, and it keeps people from putting the earbuds in their ears.
Okay.
I love that product. It's cute. It's new. There's a fantastic commuter suit holder that fits on your back like a messenger bag. It rolls up, and it keeps your suit pressed. Holds your shoes in a separate bag and an iPhone. It is an amazing Hammett, I believe, is the name of the company. I ordered them right away for my store. I'm seeing lots of color, lots of the amount of women apparel companies out here is staggering. It is so exciting. And women that are not only designing products for women, but they're using appropriate sizing. So we're seeing the fashion element coming into cycling that is beautiful fabric, good price point, keeping the American build, cut, sizing in mind. It is exciting to see so many products.
That's cool. So one of the things I'm hearing you say about trending is electronics.
Yes, and I am not as I haven't gotten to see everybody I want to see yet, but I love the idea of putting a bike on a trainer that you can put a mountain bike on. Now, it doesn't have to be a road bike. It's got a built-in 10-speed cassette. Wahoo Fitness is the one that comes to mind. I'm finding some excellent bike fitting software, so you know we don't have to buy an $8,000 system, so the smaller shops can compete with the bigger shops.
Nice.
Simple iPad downloads that help you do very precise measurements, so that was exciting. Lots and lots of pushback, I think, from the shop owners in the industry. Went to several seminars, and we're ready to get our margins back. I'm hearing, you know, we really need the respect of the industry again, and how are we going to change that? And excellent trends, of course, trending women.
Let's talk a moment about the relevance of a brick and mortar store from the perspective, not our perspective, of course, because we believe in them, but from the perspective of the exhibitor, the person who's trying to sell product to that store. What are they saying? Not just about margin and not just about money, but how about having products showing up online before, for example, you would see it? I mean, those are the kinds of things that have been going on for years, but they seem to be going on in a much more insidious way.
It really is, and I tell you, I won't. If I see a product online, there's a company called WeHoo that makes the most incredible bike trailer. It's not a tag-along, it's not a trailer. It's a great attachment for a child where you can sit there and the child can pedal or not pedal, but your ride's not over. They don't have to balance.
Okay.
And so my conversations with these vendors are, look, what are you going to do to me on Amazon? Am I going to find you on Amazon? Am I going to find you undercutting me as an IVD? Because I can't compete with a product that cost me $15. Amazon has it for $7, and I have to make margins because I've got my brick and mortar.
And what are they saying? What are the responses you're getting to that commentary? Because, of course, we hear it all the time, and we want to look for other ways to compete. But the truth is, we still have to sell some product.
The smaller businesses that really believe in the independent bike dealer, that want to grow with shops, I'm getting positive feedback. The companies that won't have those conversations with the companies that unfortunately have the financial ability to be the bully in the room. I realize we need to sell products, but if everybody was protecting the margins, then we wouldn't be having this conversation.
It's true. It's true.
What is the value of the brick and mortar? I mean, if we want to go online, can you buy an experience? Can you get the right short? Can you get the right fit online? The answer is no. You can spend a heck of a lot more trying to save a few bucks online, getting the wrong thing and having to take it into a bike shop and getting charged more because you didn't buy the product there. We do fittings for our bikes that we sell. It's a part of the service of selling the bike.
Right.
Somebody buys a bike online, it's improperly fitted. We're going to charge for that. And sometimes it ends up costing more.
And it does. I mean, I think there is another whole conversation to be had about that whole situation. I wanted to also ask you if you're hearing anything from both other bike shops and your colleagues, as well as exhibitors, about the consumer show that's going to open tomorrow. What are people saying about that?
Well, I know that for me and most of my colleagues, we're getting out of town.
Okay. So you do not have customers that you have given tickets to come in?
No. I live on the Eastern Seaboard, so I feel like this show needs to be about us. But that's my personal opinion. And tomorrow, I need to work the show one more day, but I don't want to be here with consumer. Only because I need to, this is my time to meet with my vendors and build the relationships and make orders and different things like that.
Right.
And it's just different when you've got people that are trying to, buy samples for the best deal. It's just different. I think it's exciting that the consumers can come in. It's just hard to try to conduct business in that house.
And other people are saying the same thing?
I don't think that we're actually having the physical conversation. I just know that everybody's leaving town in the morning.
Okay. So let's just talk about an extracurricular activity. What did you do beside just, slug the show floor?
Well, I have built some really incredible relationships, and we have a lot of big plans for our company. So I have literally been working day and night. We had OIWC meeting yesterday, which is incredible. I have all these women here doing incredible things to the industry. But then last night, I was at a cocktail party for America's Best Bike Shop, and then went and bought an incredibly expensive glass of wine at one bar in Las Vegas and decided that was enough.
So you went home to sleep.
I went to sleep so I could get up and work again today.
Exactly. Well, Robin, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. I didn't mean to disrupt your day, but you're kind of my eyes and ears on the show floor this year. I didn't make it out there. So have a great rest of your show, a safe trip home, and we'll talk again.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Robin Bailenga, join me from the show floor at Interbike.
It's always exciting to get updates, and you could tell she's busy.
She is busy, and people don't understand that one of the problems with Interbike and with big shows like that, even though Monday and Tuesday were the dirt demo days, you've got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Friday, you're not going to be able to see your vendors because they're going to be talking with consumers. Is that there really isn't enough time to go through all those booths. It's a big show. It needs to be longer, but the exhibitors don't want to pay more money and, you know, yada, yada, yada. It goes on and on. It's always kind of a fight. But I'm glad to hear that attendance was good. I'm actually surprised. All right, we're going to take a very quick break on the Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be right back and talk with Richard Fries out on the East Coast. Good evening, Richard. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. One of the coolest things talking to you is about all the diversity of all the cool things you do during the cycling season.
Yeah. You know, my New Year's resolution this year was to keep learning and to learn from young people. And that's a really, it's a great resolution because it makes you try things. It makes you, and I've really been focused on it quite a bit.
What
and
have you learned?
It's really paid off. Let's see, what have I learned? Tim Johnson taught me I need to stand up more when I ride, especially when I climb, and now I'm doing yoga to improve my core strength. That really is an amazing asset for a cyclist.
You do know that I'm a yoga teacher.
I do, and I do know that you comment on my Facebook posts all the time when I'm screwing it up. Yoga for me is like a Jerry Lewis movie. It's hysterical.
Okay, you know, I'd like to come film some of that. That's funny.
It's a riot. These housewives are just destroying me in it, so it's great.
It is good.
Yeah, learning a lot of stuff like that, a lot of nutritional stuff, you know, a lot of things. I drive around. Here's a great one for your listeners. If you're driving or if you're traveling, I have a tennis ball in my backpack. I have a tennis ball in my car. And I'm always throwing that behind my back, sitting on it. And, like, I learned that from Lynn Bissette. So
you mean to use it to break up fascia?
Yep.
Well, I can tell you that there is some new data about that. So be judicious and don't be too excited about it. They're saying that some of this is beginning to cause some harm. So just be careful.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
All right.
Okay. All right. Let's catch up on Providence in a little bit.
Oh, man.
But I want to know about you being a television announcer. This is new.
Well, it's actually, you know, I've done TV for about 7 years. I worked for the network that was the Outdoor Life Network, which became Versus, which then became NBC Sports Network. So I did a lot of great things in TV, and I really liked it. And, I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I got to go to Europe. I got to do stuff all over America. Really enhanced that thing where you talked about diversity. It made me go to things that I normally would not have gone to. And it's so now the transition seems to be all of us race announcers. The advent of live webcasting has basically increased the demand for good quality commentators on the sport. So I've done a little bit of it here and there, but I really just got a chance to do an amazing thing that I just happened to have the weekend open. And the great director, Kent Gordis, who I don't know if you know him, he'd be a great interview for you.
I've never talked to him. I know of him.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Great storyteller, really funny guy. Grew up with Greg LeMond, wrote Greg LeMond's first book, co-wrote it with LeMond. And he called me up and said, hey, I got this bid to do the World Championships, and it's in paracycling. And so the UCI recognizes paracycling, and, you know, and I flew in, and we did it in Greenville, South Carolina. And I have to confess, I went into it with a degree of empathy, if you will, that I was going to be, you know, I expected to be inspired by these people and to be, you know, lauding them for their courage and, you know, their will. Well, screw that. They just had great racing. These guys are full contact, kicking each other. It is just full gas right from the gun. These hand cycles are like Corvettes. I didn't realize how much contact there was at this level. I had done some stuff with hand cyclists, working with a great group called World Team Sports and Face of America. And those are beautiful rides, but these guys are amazing. You know, you go into the last race of the weekend, and it featured, and I won't go into all the categories. It's a real quick thing to study, but there's several different categories depending on your degree of disability and the specifics of your disability. But the last category featured these hand cyclists who were, with 1 kilometer to go, there's 7 guys together on a climb, and one of the guys is Alex Zanardi, who a lot of people may, some people may know in your audience.
Yep.
He was an F1 driver, and former kart champion, IRL driver, brilliant race car driver, who in the early 2000s T-boned somebody at 200 miles an hour and lost his legs.
Wow.
It's a pretty dramatic crash if
you see it
on YouTube. And he's become this, he's a playboy, he's got this entourage, and it's all in the paracycling movement. He's been phenomenal, and he just took it to them with 1 kilometer to go, tried to pass on the inside in the grass. Just amazing. I mean, it was one of the most exciting race calls I've ever had, and he didn't win.
You know what's really weird is this is the third mention of Greenville, South Carolina in the last 2 weeks, twice tonight, because the person who's giving me her Interbike report is owns a shop in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm telling you, I've never even heard of the place, and suddenly this is the third mention in 2 weeks.
It's one of the great cycling communities in America.
That's cool. That's cool. So what's the best buddies challenge?
Oh, my gosh. Now you're going into my other world. I work for Anthony Shriver, who's the nephew of JFK, if you will, the son of Eunice Shriver, who started, Eunice Shriver started, imagine this, let's talk about some pedigree. Your mother starts Special Olympics, your father starts the Peace Corps. You know, it's kind of like, well, what are you going to do? So great. And he's a really good guy. For years I came on as their marketing director, and I did that for about 4 or 5 years and raised a bunch of dough for them. But then I had some other opportunities, and so I made them, I sort of downgraded to where I did a, I became, you know, sort of a consultant, if you will. Did a lot of their production and stuff like that. So, then one day, then suddenly Anthony Shriver starts, he used to do the things like a lot of charity rides do, where the people that are involved in the mission, and Best Buddies is a mission for people with intellectual disabilities. It's a jobs and social program. It's a wonderful program, very simple. It's in over 50 countries, all 50 states. And Anthony would do the thing, and even he would laugh at himself. It's kind of the Kennedy thing. He would dress up, wave, start the ride, then get into a really nice car with a driver, go to the last, you know, start line.
Right.
Get out, wave, jump on the bike, and ride the last 15 miles. It was hideous.
That is hideous.
But he also had enormous demands. He had VIPs, he had sponsors, he had all this stuff. So somehow, I got him to do a 100-kilometer ride in Miami with, and I taught him a little bit, and on the ride was George Hincappie, who, by the way, lives in Greenville, South Carolina, Christian Vandeveld. We had a good time, and we sort of taught him riding 2x2, how to use the draft.
He's rabid.
Oh, yeah. Now the bug's bit him. Now it's out of control.
Right.
Now I'm getting text messages from him all night long,
right,
you know, about diet, nutrition, cleat position, saddle position, you know. And he's a really strikingly handsome man, and there's a lot of women that would love to have their hands on his ass. And I can tell you, I've had my hand on that man's ass for several minutes at a time climbing with him. So I just did he's done all of his rides, all of the big rides. There's 4 of them, and he actually has to do the full Washington, D.C. one next month, and he just did the Hearst Castle ride, which is stunningly beautiful and very challenging. So he did the full 100. You know, I want to say it's about 7,000 feet of climbing, and he did it. And he did it with, I had my good friends, a guy that you would love to have on your show, Patrick Brady of Red Kite Prayer.
Patrick? We've had him on the show like 5 times.
Oh, good. Well, Patrick joined me, and he'd be a great guy to talk about it. And Kurt Stockton, former U.S. Pro champion, and Robin Freina, a woman's U.S. Pro champion a few years back, and all great people. And we really just kept the group together, and we had a great time. So that's what I've been doing. That's my best buddy's hat. You want to change hats? I'm a bald man. I got a lot of hats.
I'm speaking with Richard Freese. He always is fun. He's been talking about his experience with one of the Kennedy clan, Mr. Anthony Shriver, and his experience with best buddies. But we're going to move on and talk a little bit about a dirt road race, the Vermont Overland Grand Prix. So dirt racing suddenly, you know, it's like cyclocross is big. This dirt racing's getting big.
It's huge.
What's going on?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think the advent of cyclocross went hand in hand with the rise of dirt road racing. It's the perfect bike for it. And we had a family wedding up in Vermont this summer, so we rented a cabin. And I was back home every morning at 10 a.m. while all the kids were still sleeping. But I had just been on dirt roads for 3 hours, and it was just exquisite. You soften up the tires, and you can do it with a 25, you know, or a 28cc tire if you can. You know, if you can fit it in the brakes. And what's good about it, I mean, you see about five cars on these dirt roads, and the cars you see are not that aggravated. It's relatively safe. It's bucolic. It's challenging. And it depends on where you are. But, you know, this kind of all started, there's been a few dirt sections in some races that, and I think that, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest, the great Civil War general, said, who gets there first with the most wins. So a lot of these promoters that promoted dirt things first have had great success. But now what's happening is the quality of the production is going up, and the quality of the promotion is going up, and people are actually working a little harder at it.
What kind of distances are we talking about?
Well, the Vermont Overland Grand Prix was a first-year event put on by Peter Vollers, a former pro rider, now an attorney, lives in Woodstock, Vermont. He took over the whole downtown of Woodstock for this start. And he got, like, I want to say 500 riders signed up. And his distance was 52 miles. And this race was so exquisite. First off, you felt really safe. A lot of these dirt road events, and I'm just going to, they're such nominal support. Minimal support, that you really need pump and a spare, and heaven forbid you go down, because you're like, it may be, you know, they'll get to the end of the day and realize your car is still in the parking lot,
right.
And you're in some weeds. But this one was, they had guys on enduro motorcycles, the course was clearly marked, super challenging, but they start us all at once. One mass start.
Nice.
And it is a poop your pants front row. I mean, Tim Johnson's there, Gabby Duren's there. It's some top mountain bikers, top road racers, but mostly it's right in that window of August, right as the cross season is coming, you know? And so everybody, back here in New England, Diane, they're canceling crits in August. Crits are like shutting up. They're just done.
Good.
Because
I think
nobody
they're dangerous.
Signs up. Well, crits are exciting.
They are exciting for spectators. You're right. That's true.
And in New England, you know, there's a time and a place for them. But you don't do them in August anymore because everybody's getting ready
season.
For cross.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of us, you know, if we're going to race a full cyclocross season as we have in New England, you damn well better not go to a lot of races and criteriums in August or else you'll be divorced by the holidays. So these dirt road races strung up in this Vermont Overland Grand Prix. It was the – now, I was ruined because the day before I did an event down in – Western Mass, where I got so lost, I ended up doing 95 miles on dirt roads in an unmarked course. This one, you line up, and it is full gas out of the gate. I did get the hole shot. I do want you to know that.
Attaboy.
Had to grab Cooper Wilfie by the pockets and throw him back. But I got the hole shot, and then it is game on. I got hit in the head with a water bottle blowing out of cages. It was like Ben-Hur. But then they have these seven sections that they call Vermont Pave. In it, most of the, it's probably, I want to say 60% dirt, 30% road pavement, and then this Vermont Pave, which is basically glorified Jeep trails. You're riding upstreams with some tracks in them somewhere. You are going down, it's so hard that the climbs are so steep, and a lot of times you're just walking. And then the descents, you think, oh, great, I can rest. Well, there is no rest because you're so terrified going down these things.
Exactly.
You know, you got to hang your ass off the back of the saddle. You're grabbing brake. You're trying to navigate gravel. But really one of the most exquisite cycling experiences I've ever had. It's not, you know, this isn't a charity ride. It's a big, 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 big person bike race. And it's hard. But
that's
I did
okay.
it as a ride. You know, I went right out the back and did it as a ride with my friend Steve Roscoe, the founder of Bike Ridge. So,
very cool. I mean, it just sounds like a lot of fun, if nothing else.
It's a hoot. And then
yeah.
you get back into town. The last pavé is 20% grade in sand.
Ugh. So you,
I know.
Ugh.
I know.
Hey, you know what? I'm glad I'm not cleaning your bike.
I still have the dirt on it. I'm riding it tonight. It's
yeah,
that a
boy. All right. I promised before we hung up, we're going to talk about Providence. So last time we talked about it, you pulled it out of the regular festival because you're trying to get it to be a World Cup. Is that correct?
Yeah, I took it out of the Verge New England series, which is really one of the fabled, you know, regional series, if not the best regional series in
for
America.
For cyclocross, yes.
Yeah, and I withdrew from it for a few reasons. Some of it had to do with how I could run my schedule, but a lot of it is we are going to hopefully submit a bid to host a World Cup in 2015. So we have to have the bid submit by December 1st. I have a lot of meetings with city officials. I really have to prove that I can take care of this wonderful park. Anybody that has raced in it is just stunned at, you know, where we race. And really, that's the plan. So we are trying to really get ourselves ready. We have Simon Burney is the UCI technical delegate coming. We have, you know, we really hold ourselves to high standards. I really have a great, great, great staff, and they work really hard.
And
year
when
round.
Is the event this year?
October 3, 4, and 5.
Okay.
UCI Category 1 is on the 4th. We all watched Cross Vegas last night. Brooke Watt really set a very high standard for us, that really high bar for us to match in terms of appearance and race quality. But then we do the fun thing on October 3rd. The Friday night stuff is fun.
You're in addition still doing to the, that. Good. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The Madison is one of the funnest races you'll ever see. It's
yep.
the two-person teams. So that's a blast. And, yeah, we our Grand Fondo on Sunday is growing. We expect about 500 riders for the Grand Fondo. Ted King's coming back.
Good.
If you want to meet Ted King, come on out. And our expo just grows in leaps and bounds. We are we have enough people that if they all flush the toilet at once, Providence would be in trouble.
Yeah, except we're not using flush toilets, so it's yes. not a problem.
Right.
Right. As always, it's so much fun to talk with you. You always are doing so many cool things. I wish I could come out to Providence. I didn't go to Interbike this year. I am going to go to the Philly Bike Expo. So if you're in that area, November,
try to go.
November 8th and 9th, I would love to see you there. And good luck with the UCI. I want to know, you'll let me know if it becomes a World Cup. And boy, I'll tell you, I'll be there for sure.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, I'll leave you with my new quote, my favorite quote from Jens Voigt.
Go ahead. I love it.
It is. I love that guy. And I'm doing one of the things we're doing at Providence, we're doing a medical symposium on cycling, on competitive cycling. All these emergency doctors are coming. And in the brochure, they have this great quote from Jens Voigt. And I love it. It is, having things organized is for small-minded people. Genius organizes chaos. Or genius controls chaos. It's one of the greatest quotes ever.
That's awesome. Well, on that note,
all right.
We will say goodnight. You have a wonderful evening. Have a great ride.
Love the show. See you
Thank
guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Richard Freese joined me from his office at Best Buddies. He's always fun.
Yeah, always exciting and so many things going on.
Oh, my God. I mean, I can't even imagine how he keeps track of it all. But he does. He does. And Providence should be fun this year. I wouldn't mind meeting Mr. Anthony Shriver. I'll bet he's cute. I'm not interested
in putting
my hand.
Don't ask me.
You're not into cute guys. Okay. All right. On that note, we are going to take a break. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be back with some news, and then we're going to hand on over to Italy and talk with David Trimble.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we've got some news for you. This has to be the saddest and perhaps worst story ever. I don't know if you saw it. It comes from Cincinnati's WLWT. It's from September 4th. I grew up with that television station. It was Channel 5 down there, if I'm not mistaken. Police say a man who was biking from Maryland to Miami to propose to his girlfriend was fatally stabbed by a homeless man outside a McDonald's restaurant. Kevin Adorno, 28, from Connecticut, stopped at a McDonald's to grab a bite to eat and to call his girlfriend while on his quote-unquote bucket list trek across multiple states when he was stabbed by a homeless man, reports the Associated Press. After the attack, Adorno reportedly stumbled into the restaurant and was being helped by patrons but died at the scene. 59-year-old Rene Herrera Cruz was arrested a short time later at a Burger King across the street, where he told officers he thought Adorno was using his cell phone to direct people to attack him. Cruz is charged with first-degree murder. Is that the saddest story you've ever heard?
That's horrible.
It is horrible. I hope you have something a little better than that, or at least funny, maybe.
Let's go with something positive.
Okay, good.
Meredith Miller.
Yes, our girl Meredith.
I'm going to read her tweet from 14 hours ago. Did that just happen? I've never been on the podium before at Cross Vegas, and tonight I won. Wow, wow. Proud moment for the team Gnosis EX. I actually stayed up for this on Wednesday night until 2 o'clock in the morning,
yes,
watching both the men's and the women's Cross Vegas. The men's had a little controversy at the end, which was a little crazy. But the women's race, if you have an opportunity to watch it, Meredith did an awesome job. She stayed in the top three and the top 10 all night. And on the last turn, sprint to the finish, she just blasted past Ms. Compton. And it was fabulous. It was great.
That's great. Well, congratulations to Meredith. That's awesome. That's really good. All right, this is a good one. I'm going to wash that mouth out with soap department. It's reported by a woman named Emma Glanfield for the UK's Daily Mail. It's the tale of a motorist who was able to spew 25 nasty epithets in 35 seconds and ended up paying a huge fine for his foul mouth. This is the moment a Jaguar driver dubbed, quote, Britain's angriest motorist, unquote, was caught on camera swearing at a cyclist 25 times in just 35 seconds. Now, there is a video that goes along with this, and every half a second there's a bleep. Mark Baldwin, age 60, launched the foul-mouthed tirade against cyclist Eddie Bell, 38, who captured the jaw-dropping footage on his helmet cam. Another good reason to have a camera on top of your helmet. Mr. Bell, a father of four, was out cycling on a country road when Baldwin stopped his 45,000 pound, meaning money, not weight, Jaguar XF in a junction box designed for cyclists only. So he's already, you know, like breaking the law.
Well, but he drives a Jaguar, so.
That's true. Mr. Bell politely told him to move, but the driver got out of his car and began an abusive rant, threatening to give him an effing decking. The shocking incident, which occurred last March, saw Baldwin verbally abuse Mr. Bell more than 24 times during the one-minute video, and uses the F word at least 10 times, the C word 7 times, the W word 8 times, and the S word once.
So he didn't quite get all of George Carlin's 7
no, but he
words
got a lot
you can't
of them.
Say on TV, but right. He got a lot in.
Yeah, the video also captures Baldwin hitting the unsuspecting cyclist on the head during the attack. Mr. Bell said, I threw my arms up in exasperation at having to share the cycle-only box with a car. The driver would down his window and started swearing at me. Holy smokes, can you believe this? It's just really hard. So when the lights changed, she turned left. I carried on straight. A few minutes later, he sped past me. About 3 miles up the street, I could see he had pulled in and was walking towards me. Baldwin, who lives in a million-pound property in Longfield, Kent, pleaded guilty to using threatening or abusive words or behavior with intent to cause the victim to think violence would be used against him. The assault charge was dropped, but during his appearance at Hastings Magistrates Court, Baldwin was fined £505 and ordered to pay £135 costs and victim surcharge. Mr. Bell had only just got back on his bike when the incident occurred, having suffered a shattered pelvis and two broken hips in a horror crash in 2012. I mean, really. He said, I'd never get into an altercation with a motorist, especially because I was so badly injured last time I was knocked off my bike. Hopefully, Mr. Baldwin will think twice about his actions in the future.
It's a good thing there was a camera.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have a story of an Ottawa resident who was doored in a cycling incident.
Oh,
no camera involved. And this is from the ottawa.ctvnews.ca. So it happens all too often to cyclists. One of their greatest fears, getting hit by a driver opening his door. It happened yesterday, and that was last week, September 9th, to Ottawa's deputy chief, police chief, Jill Skinner.
Oh, no.
The officer, wearing bright reflective material, was so shocked it happened, she took to social media to warn drivers to be careful. The lady opened her door and jammed it into the side of my bike, says Deputy Police Chief Jill Skinner, as she put her reflective vest and helmet on for a short bike ride. Ottawa's second top cop has been cycling home from work for years. Yesterday around 5:30, she was riding along Wellington Street, and she says, when a woman flung her door open right into my path. She started to give me excuses, but really, it's about taking that 1 second to look in the rearview mirror, and she agreed she'll be more aware of her surroundings. Now, here's the interesting thing. Because she's the deputy police chief, she could have given her a ticket.
Right.
She didn't. She gave her a talking to, and she went to Twitter to make an example of the situation. So it's...
Meanwhile, isn't it illegal not to look in your mirror and open the door carefully into traffic?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
It even happens to the deputy police chief.
Evidently. I guess if you ride a bike, watch out for people opening doors. It's one of my biggest fears.
Yep.
Always. Okay, we're still talking a little bit of violent behavior. This comes from the "Mom, he hit me!" category. And it's going on in the Peloton.
Really?
Oh, you read this.
Yeah.
Italian Gianluca Brambilla, Omega Pharma Quickstep, and Russia's Ivan Rovni, Tinkoff Saxo, came to blows while riding at the front of stage 16 at the Vuelta last Monday. In bizarre circumstances, both men landed punches and elbowed each other while continuing to ride in the breakaway group of 13 riders on the 160.5-kilometer stage of the race from San Martin del Rey Arroyo to La Farapona. It is believed that the Omega Pharma Quickstep rider was upset that Rovni was disrupting the pacemaking in the break. Rovni even had to ask for a new pair of sunglasses from his Tinkoff Saxo team car as they were broken in the altercation. During the final part of the stage, both riders were ejected from the race for a fight. As if that's not enough, right? That was stage 16. Stage 17 saw yet another altercation. I mean, what's going on in the Peloton? Okay, they're not doping anymore. Now they're just pissed off at one another. Philip Dagnan from Sky wrote that Joaquin Rodriguez, I have a little problem with these names, from Katusha, punched him in the face and split his lip.
I don't think we need to get into pro wrestling in order to...
I guess not, but I guess that one came to a different conclusion. I mean, it's a long column, but I mean, it's sort of like two stages in a row and guys are like duking it out.
Yeah.
Get on your bike and ride.
Just shut up and ride.
Exactly. Shut up, legs. Okay, go ahead. You've got to have better.
Talked about Project X.
We did.
A couple of weeks ago. In raising money for...
That is correct.
This is actually a positive story about... sponsorship. United Healthcare extends its relationship with Momentum Sports Group Professional Cycling Team. And this came out of Oakland, California, September 10th. Momentum Sports Group, owners and operators of the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team, announced that title sponsor United Healthcare has extended its support of the program for an additional 3 years through the 2017 year. So that's a positive that we see, and we want to make sure that we get a lot of positive out.
I should say so. That's excellent. Excellent. Wonderful. Well, Jackie Crowell?
Yeah.
Maybe she'll be back racing next year.
We hope so.
We hope so. Okay. Our buddy Lance hasn't been in the news for a while, but he's in the news this time.
I saw this story.
I know. It comes from competitor Armstrong Lawyers Quarrel Federal Error. You know, we got to look for the technical. Give him a T, technical foul. Lance Armstrong and his legal team appear to have caught a break, at least for now. The New York Daily News recently reported that Armstrong's attorneys are battling the Department of Justice over what's been construed as a federal error that saw the DOJ lawyers accidentally leak sensitive papers to the Armstrong team. Why is that a problem?
I don't know all the legal ramifications of that. My favorite part of the story is, and I don't know if you have it there, is the comments by the lawyers.
Yes. Quote, you need to take responsibility for your own error and stop making unfounded accusations against other lawyers who actually have professional reputations they have earned and value, wrote Elliot Peters of the San Francisco firm Kecker and Van Nest. And that's what you're talking about.
That was my favorite part.
It merely suggests that you like to bully people and abuse your power as a government lawyer by leveling serious accusations without any factual basis. It's the bullying and the power part.
Does he know what side he's working for?
I'm not sure. I just know that, you know, he learned something from it. Whatever. You got any more?
Two quick ones. Okay. Last is, and this is from Interbike. We saw, and I found this on Bike Radar.
Okay.
Luck, L-U-C-K.
Yes.
Shoe-based power meter. And this is a first look. And what I looked at, I saw this, and this is fabulous because everything is fitting in right in the base of the shoe. And it actually counts the strokes and all the other stuff. So you can actually hop from bike to bike and it doesn't make any difference. You don't have to have everything attached to the bike.
So there's some sort of a strain gauge in the shoe?
It's right in the shoe. And What caught my attention was it looked like Get Smart.
Yeah.
It looked like Maxwell Smart.
Here with the shoe phone.
But
that's great.
That was a really cool product that I can see a lot of applications for that. And
cool.
Really work out well. And the last thing I came across was, have you seen the video or the really short film of Davis and Connie Finney?
I have.
That's a really cool.
It's beautiful. Rafa produced it. It's about 15:54, I think.
Yeah,
15 minutes.
Something
54.
Like that. Find it on YouTube. Search it, and
if you're interested,
you have to see. It's a really cool.
It is cool
story.
Yeah, and you know Davis is just so cute.
Yeah.
He's so cute. All right, we are going to hurry on over to Italy. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
That we actually get to go to Italy, even if it's only via Skype. We're going to speak with race director of the Red Hook Criterium. Hi, David. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Actually, it's not morning for you, huh?
No, it's, I guess, late afternoon.
Yeah.
5 p.m. in Milan, Italy.
Nice. What's going on in Milan today?
We're just working hard, putting the final details on the Red Hook Crit Milan.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. Back in March, there was a group of riders who raced in the dark and the rain and fixed gear bikes, no brakes, you know, track bikes, the Red Hook Criterium. Tell me a little bit about the history of the event and your connection with it.
Well, I founded the Red Hook Crit in 2008. The first year, it was really small. I just kind of invited a few of my friends down to what was actually my birthday party. And being a bike racer, you know, I knew that my friends who are bike racers, they're not going to come to a party unless there's a chance at personal glory. So I kind of organized this little race alongside the party, called it the Red Hook Crit, and it's just grown from there.
Did the original race use fixed gear, no brake bikes?
Yeah, the original race, you know, the rules are the same as the first year. You know, we've refined a few things, but it's still basically exactly the same race. At the time, I was racing both kind of like USA Cycling road races and also Alley Cats, which use track bikes. And I invented the Red Hook Crit to kind of combine both of them. So
tell our listeners why you chose Red Hook Crit as the name. I did look it up and I do know why, but perhaps they don't.
It's called the Red Hook Crit because it's in the neighborhood, the Brooklyn neighborhood that's called Red Hook. And when I moved to Red Hook, or I moved to New York City, I actually moved to this neighborhood. I was living in my uncle's wood shop, and the neighborhood is it's not easily accessible by public transportation, so it's very quiet. You know, at night the streets are completely empty, and it was really the only place in Brooklyn and the perfect place to launch this race.
So explain the format of the race, how it unfolds each time you do it.
Well, the race started out, I mean, it's a criterium, so it's multiple laps around a short technical circuit. The race rules are very simple. It's typically 24 laps of a 1.25 kilometer course. The race takes about 45 minutes, and, you know, it's very simple. The first person to cross the line wins.
What do they win?
Well, we keep, you know, the prize money is fairly humble. You know, it's around $750 for first.
Which that sounds like a lot of money.
It's a decent amount of money, but when you consider kind of the, I think, the prestige and profile and the level of athletes who are racing, it's not a lot. But really what, you know, it's about, you know, the glory that goes along with it. And also all of our sponsors produce really special custom products around the race. So the winner gets a complete custom painted bicycle by Cinelli. They get custom helmets by Giro, custom jerseys by Castelli. You know, Timbuktu does bags. So they get this huge assortment of like Red Hood Crit branded special collaborations along with the prize money.
Why do you think all these sponsors have sort of latched on to this event? That's a lot of sponsorship in a very unusual way, which, by the way, I like a lot. I think it's an awesome format. But why do you think people like Cinelli and Giro and Castelli and all these people have said, we want our product to have the Red Hook name on it?
You know, I think the format is exciting. It's kind of a new style of bike racing, and there's a lot of people entering the sport through this sport, you know, through this kind of racing. So obviously they're excited to be able to reach a new audience. But, you know, more so than that, we approach the race as a big design and almost art project. You know, we focus a lot on the graphic design and the style and the kind of visual theme of the event. And so when the sponsors are able to collaborate with us and make these really beautiful one-off pieces, it's kind of a showcase of what they're capable of.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I'm speaking with David Trimble. He is the originator and race director for the Red Hook Criterium. He is in Milan, Italy, planning the next in the series. It's 4 races a year. Is that what I understand?
This year we have 3 events. Last year we had 4, and it's going to be back up to 4 in 2015.
Cool. So do you always run the event at night?
Historically, the race is held at night. We did hold it once during the afternoon in Milan in 2012. But, I mean, traditionally, we held it late at night just because we didn't have any permits or anything. And that was the only time we could get away with it. But now, you know, it's people are, you know, for spectators, it's more interesting and more exciting at night. You know, the visuals are more interesting.
Sure.
And also people are, you know, you don't have to wake up early and go watch it.
So I have a question about the people who are actually entering this event. It's a limited field. You have both a men's and a women's race. And people are literally coming from all over the world to do this short, exciting sort of one-off race. How did the interest grow, and how do you choose who can actually participate?
Yeah, it's a good question. So now, you know, we just held our race in Barcelona 2 weeks ago, and we had athletes from 25 different countries. So yeah, there's definitely, you know, people really traveling from far distances to race. You know, like you said, a very short, intense race. And We opened the race up to 250 entrants, and only 85 are actually able to start the event. So out of the 250, we run qualifying heats where you get 20 minutes on the course, and your fastest lap is what qualifies you for the event. So the 250 cyclists, literally anyone can race. You don't have to have a USA cycling license, or you don't have to have any kind of license, but the qualifying sessions really kind of separate the people who have the fitness and the ability, you know, from the ones who don't.
How many of the people who, and this is sort of a rough estimate, who come to the qualifying events and then eventually are, you know, able to race, to compete because they made the cut, have actually raced track style bikes on the road before? I mean, would you say that almost everybody either started out as a messenger? I mean, you have some pros actually doing this too.
Yeah, well, I think the race, because it's such a new format and it's such a kind of simple format, it really appeals to people from all different cycling genres. So we have riders who race the track and race the road and mountain bike and cyclocross. You know, so I think it kind of, you know, we really get a wide range of different cyclists. We've had riders riders who have never ridden a track bike off of the velodrome before come and do very well. And we've also had pro cyclists come who couldn't even qualify. So, you know, your previous experience level doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do well in this race, but it definitely helps.
You tend to do a video with every event, and the videos are exciting. That is what brought me my attention to your event, was the video. I think it was in the rain. It must have been the one in March this year, yes?
Yeah.
It's just a dynamic and great video. If anybody's interested, it's on Vimeo, if I'm not mistaken. So tell me about the women who compete. In fact, did I read this correctly, that a woman actually competed among the men one time and won? Is that true? Or did I make that up?
Yeah, no, that's true. this year was the first year we've ever held a separate women's field. But in 2008, when I held the very first Red Hook Crit, a friend of my sister's came up from North Carolina. She had no idea what she was getting into, and she ended up winning the race. her name's Casey Manderfield. So that was, ever since then, I kind of like made a vow to never have a separate women's field, because I was like, well, if she can win the race, she can race with the men. But as the race grew over the years, it became apparent there was, really a need for a separate field.
So my last question is, do you intend to expand the number of events or come up with another? Obviously, this is what you're doing now, like as a job. Yes.
Yeah, I work on this 7 days a week, pretty much every day of the year. So it's a full-time job. I mean, with our title sponsor, Rockstar Games, we're really trying to expand the championship, because that's for me, that's what's really exciting, is that it's kind of like Formula One, where you go to each, go to a race in a different city around the world and score points in the overall championship. So we're going to try to expand that as much as we can. Next year we're planning on going to London, and beyond that, we'd like to do a second race in the United States and a race in Berlin. So we're going to keep
Cleveland.
Yeah, we're going to keep pushing to expand it.
Well, I really think it's a cool idea. The next race then is going to be in Milan on the 11th of October. Is it going to be streamed live? Will people be able to watch it?
We don't have live streaming yet. Something we're planning in the future, but we do have an iPhone app. It's actually an iPhone and Android app. It's called Red Hook Crit Race Day, and you can get all of our live timing and scoring feed through that.
Very, very cool. Well, I wish you a lot of luck. It's an exciting new style of racing. I think it's got a lot of mass appeal, and I hope that you do very, very well with it this year, and thanks for talking with me this evening.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right. You have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. David Trimble joined me from his planning office in Milan, Italy, to tell us about the Red Hook Criterium. I just think it sounds like a really, really cool idea. I'm not sure I recommend, if you haven't tried it, to get out on the road on a fixed gear bike without any brakes anytime soon. But if you have time, go for a ride. You've been listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.